You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street. I'm John.
I'm Kim.
And we are here today to talk about James Wan's Malignant.
Yes, if you missed our announcement in last week's episode, Nightmare on Film Street is back to being a weekly podcast. We are splitting up our Kooky Cannibals double feature with a spoiler-free review of James Wan's Malignant.
Yeah, there's a pretty good chance you've heard some buzz about this movie. It has an incredibly wild, surprising third act, and we will not be spoiling any of it for you.
Not at all. Yeah, absolutely not.
If you're still planning on seeing the movie or you're curious about whether or not to check it out, we're here to tell you three good things about it, three reasons why you should absolutely go see this in the movie theater, and we're still going to preserve that real surprise ending.
But don't worry, we are both itching to talk about this movie, so we're also going to do a little add-on bonus episode where we get spoiler-tastic.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be spilling the beans about all the gory details over in the Nightmare on Film Street Fiend Club at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub. It's going to be a companion episode to this one. We're going to talk about three main points that we love about Malignant, and we might just have a couple more over in that bonus episode. But before we talk about James Wan's Malignant, which I'm so itching to do, we literally just finished seeing the movie for a second time. Very pumped. John, what's keeping you creepy this week?
We're in the middle of our TIFF 2021 coverage.
Woo!
We just got back from Toronto proper to see a few movies in person, which is always a delight. The presentation at any film festival, but at TIFF, like, everybody always takes it super seriously. So the picture is perfect. The sound is crisp. They start on time. And we've been watching some digital movies at home.
Also, just a shout out to TIFF for being super meticulous this year about safety and stuff.
Yeah.
They were requiring vaccination passports or COVID test proof and stuff, and they checked at every door. The organization was great. There was no waiting in lines and stuff just to keep everybody moving. It was, like, really well done.
Yeah.
I was a little hesitant, you know, going back into the theater so frequently. Like, we went in a bunch over the weekend, and I've kind of been dallying back at the theater since we got our vaccination, like, a couple months ago. So I felt very safe going in and out of the theater like four times in one day.
Yeah, and they use your reserve seating for contact tracing, because if anybody gets notified about anything down the line, they can trace you back to TIFF and say, okay, well, these 12 people sitting around that seat should probably get a notice as well, kind of deal. But, you know, in those in-person screenings, we got to check out Edgar Wright's Last Night in Soho.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are jealous about this one because there's an amazing trailer out. I don't know if you've seen it, but it doesn't spoil the movie at all. It
nope.
Just sets up the tone and the theme and just how fucking rockin' this movie looks. And it looks that good.
Yeah, I mean, if you like Edgar Wright, you probably already know that this movie's gonna have a killer soundtrack, dope cinematography, real fun stuff.
Edits for days.
Yeah, there's all of that. And when shit gets dark, it's a real blast. Like, it's like Giallo-inspired nightmare stuff. It's, I really enjoyed lots of this movie. I wouldn't call it my favorite Edgar Wright movie, but I think it has some of his, like, most impressive special effects and camera work of his entire career.
We also caught the very under wraps found footage film Dash Cam, the follow-up film from Rob Savage, Jed Shepard, and Gemma Hurley's Host, which took Shudder by storm the very early days of the pandemic. This one, there's so very little known about it that I don't want to spoil anything. Other than that, you are following a character who live streams from a car. She has something called Band Car, where she raps as she's driving, and shit goes down one night, and obviously it's found footage, so it's all captured on film. This is a great follow-up for the host team because it stays in the vein of like the Screen Life type of film in that we're following a live stream the whole night and shit gets off the rails. It's a bonkers movie. It's wild. It's chaotic, and it's not going to be for everybody, so I'm very interested for people to start seeing this movie. It is, I think, still up for acquisition, so there's no trailer or anything yet, but we'll definitely keep you guys posted when this one gets a release.
Yeah, and if you're, you know, any UK listeners, it is playing at a film festival in the UK, I think at the end of the month, so keep an eye out for that if you want to check it out yourself. For now, it is still on the film festival circuit, like Kim said, but I would expect it to probably be available either VOD or in theaters sometime in 2022.
Yeah, and Last Night in Soho is out this October.
Oh, so. Yeah, I didn't mention that. I believe October 29th. It's surprisingly a good movie to see pre-Halloween.
Pre-Halloween.
You can follow all of our coverage of the film festival over at nofspodcast.com. Most of those reviews are still on the homepage. If not, just search TIFF 2021. You'll find them there.
We also just launched kind of a tradition here at Nightmare on Film Street. We always celebrate Halloween starting October 1st, and this year is no different. We launched the 31-Day Horror Challenge, hashtag 31-Day Horror Challenge. You can find out more about that at nofspodcast.com/31-Day-Horror-Challenge-2021. There's tons of details there. It's basically a month-long competition where you are given a horror movie prompt for each day, and you have to watch a horror movie that fits that theme. For instance, day one is Reanimated, so you have to watch something that fits in the Reanimated theme. Some people I know are already planning on watching Reanimator. Some people have maybe some vampire films lined
up. Oh, that's a good idea.
Zombie films, whatever you think of that fits in that category. And it doesn't just have to be movie watching. We want you to share your cool setups. We want you to share your themed drawings, recipes, cocktails.
Somebody has already told us that they're going to try and do themed cocktails for these, which is genius.
It's going to be super fun. And it's not just a competition, even though you're going to get cool cred if you do every single day of the month. We are also giving out weekly prizes, gift cards for our web store for cool t-shirts and shit. And if you haven't checked those out, that's store.nofspodcast.com. There is also a monthly grand prize. It is a Halloween 365 prize pack. All of the prizes in total are worth over $500. So there is a ton of sweet shit that we're giving away, including a collector's edition of the original Halloween with a limited edition vinyl.
Yeah, that looks kind of jealous.
So cool. But you can see all of those details, like I said, at nofspodcast.com/31-Day-Horror-Challenge-2021. There are also downloadable graphics so you can get the theme for yourself. You can share them on social media. You can print them out, whatever you want. All of the info is there and how to enter those giveaways.
I'm really excited for somebody to win that prize pack because, I mean, there is nothing worse than November 1st. Am I right?
Oh, that's a good rhyme.
It was unintentional, but there's nothing sadder than the day after Halloween because, you know, it is the furthest you are from another Halloween season. And with this giveaway, it's going to help you keep that Halloween spirit alive 365, which I think anybody listening to this podcast is probably already doing.
You rhymed again, by the way.
Did I?
Keep the Halloween season alive 365.
Okay, well, it's clearly, I'm inspired. I'm already taken by the Halloween spirit, I guess. But it's that attitude that has freaks like us going to the theater to see a wild-ass movie like James Wan's Malignant. I'm so happy we're finally here and we can talk about this. But before we get started, we're going to toss you over to the trailer. Here it is.
The body of Dr. Florence Weaver was found brutally murdered in her home this morning.
Did you know her?
No, but I saw her die.
I'm seeing things. I'm seeing murders. As they're happening.
Hello?
He says his name is Gabriel.
I think he's someone from my past.
Happy birthday.
Whatever happened to you before you joined our family hurt you in a way that I can't even imagine.
Just stop saying that.
Maddie, who are you talking to?
Gabriel.
Is he your imaginary friend?
He's the devil.
whatever it was.
It's back. He killed again.
He's getting closer.
He wants to talk to you. Mom, what do you know? He's coming for me.
So at the time of recording this, Malignant has only just come out in the theater. It is now the Tuesday after the Friday release. So early reviews are still fluctuating. Like, more than almost any movie that I have ever seen. Every day I check Rotten Tomatoes, and it's like, it goes up 10 points, it goes down 20, it jumps back up 30, and it's just the reception for this movie has been insane.
I will say, though, there were no reviews out prior to the film's release, so a lot of the stuff that's coming out is fresh as they come. There were not tons of reviews on Rotten Tomatoes at all before Friday, so they're still flooding in.
Yeah, that's a whole other story altogether. I'll get to it in a second, but right now, Malignant is currently sitting at a 6.3 out of 10 on IMDb, 77% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, good.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's finally, it's back up.
It's climbing up.
Yeah, and a 3.2 out of 5 on Letterboxd. You better believe we are one of those fresh tomatoes on Rotten Tomatoes.
We are one of the freshest tomatoes on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh my God, yes. So I saw this movie mid-August, and I had to like sign a non-disclosure agreement. It's, like, I had to sign a form saying that I would not talk about it. I would not tell anybody that I saw it. And I would not disclose any information about it. And I have to say, this has, keeping the secrets of this movie from Kim has been the hardest part of running Nightmare on Film Street.
Yeah, people think that we automatically get to see movies together, and it's not true. And in this case, it was very, very hard for me as the non-Malignant viewer of this household.
Yeah, it was all because I was going to be interviewing James Wan at a roundtable, which you can find on the website. But like what Kim was talking about, how there were no reviews, that is like super strange. And like, let me peel back the curtain a little bit. Like, if you're not a press person and you've never dealt with embargoes, like, the idea is you're not allowed to talk about something, you're not allowed to tweet about it until a specific time, and that's usually the week of release, maybe a Monday, maybe Wednesday. They give you the go ahead, you can put out your review and you can start promoting the movie. They did not allow anybody to say anything about this movie until the day it came out, and I think that was a great choice.
It was the smartest decision.
Yeah, because here we are, like, 5 days later, and no one's talking about the ending. Everybody's like, no, you gotta see this for yourself. And again, we will not be spoiling any of that.
Absolutely not.
But the last 30 minutes of this movie are what's just gonna keep my batteries running for the next 5 months. So, but I mean, like, a TLDR, Kim, what's Malignant about? Like, if somebody has never heard of it, or they've been avoiding the trailer, what is this damn movie about?
I cannot synopsize this film.
Okay, so there's a woman named Madison. She has been, like a lot of characters in a James Wan movie, attacked. Her and her husband have been attacked by some strange entity. It's like a dark, shadowy figure in her house, but there's no sign of it when she wakes up the next morning to find her husband just like head twisted around. And of course, the cops think that she had something to do with it. She's trying to pick the pieces of her life back up, but this entity wants her. She doesn't know who it is, where it came from, and has some sort of psychic bond with it. It's going around killing people across the city that she has no idea, like no relation to, but for some reason she has to witness all of these horrible acts. And the rest of the movie is basically trying to figure out who the fuck this guy is, what he wants with her, and how she can stop him.
Good job, John.
Thanks. That was actually very hard. Like, I'm sweating trying to find the words for that, because it's like at its core a very simple story, except when you can't talk about the one thing you want to talk about. Fuck.
Yes. So one thing I want to give major credit to with this film, and it's going to be point one of our three good things about Malignant, is how true to James Wan it is, and it really plays in the James Wan wheelhouse. The first third of this movie is reeling you in like a caught fish. You are watching Insidious. You are watching The Conjuring. You are seeing the staircase that you know and love.
Yeah.
The dark shadows, the creepy jump scares and ghostly entities. And you are lulled into thinking that this is going to be another one of James Wan's haunted house movies. And it is. It's definitely that.
Until it isn't.
Until it is not. And there are so many really great homages to James Wan's career and style in this film.
All over the place.
All over the place.
Yeah, like if you took all of his movies and threw them in a blender, this is kind of what you would get, right?
Absolutely. Like, there's even a little bit of Fast and the Furious in
here. Yeah, like all of the car shots in this movie are like really stylish.
And there's some super sweepy camera movements that you know he perfected doing action sequences with cars.
Yeah, and Aquaman 2, right? Because there are fight sequences in this movie that are straight out of a superhero playbook. You know, except this thing is cutting off arms and stabbing people in the face and stuff. Like, it's a lot more violent than you would expect from a fucking DC Comics movie.
And there's even a little bit of Saw in this movie with
There's a lot of Saw in this movie. What are you talking
well,
about?
Well, I was pinpointing precisely down to the repetitive kind of music refrain.
Love it.
That reminds me so much of that, like, iconic score from the original Saw film. And,
yeah.
And all of the Saw movies. It's one of the most consistent things through the movies is that one Saw refrain.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. This movie is really well done sound-wise, and it's got such a Saw-y vibe.
Oh man, I'm so glad you mentioned the sound. The sound design in any James Wan movie is always spectacular. This one, no exception. And I think it's essential to making a good scare sequence. And, you know, as much as this is like a really weird departure from James Wan, you know, from something like the Conjuring movies, those scare sequences are still, like, it sucks the air out of the room,
yes.
Right?
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Something really original about this film is it uses your knowledge of the James Wan playbook against you.
Oh my God, yeah.
It lulls the audience into thinking this is the Conjuring 5 and that what you see is what you get in terms of jump scares. So we're all settling in for little ghost children running around and heading into the further. And this movie gets off the rails. Like, it goes bonkers.
But it does, it still does go to, like, those further places, right? Like, there's a section in this movie where we are in the underground tunnels of Seattle. There is a
city on top of a city.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to describe it. The old Seattle is buried underneath real Seattle. You can still see the cobblestone streets and stuff, but there's a chase sequence between the villain of the movie and the cop. And when we get there, it's all this old, like, like carriages and shit, and everything's covered in cobwebs.
Creepy cobblestones and fog for days.
It is exactly like Patrick Wilson, like going through the further to try and find his son with a torchlight and a bunch of weird stuff all around.
All that's missing
the house.
Is Lin Shaye.
That's it, right? You throw Lin Shaye in there, and this is a back. Like, this is a, like, it exists in the Insidious universe. It's its own thing, but it also, you know, happens to be there. Man, even just talking about Insidious, the villain has his own little lair, just like the villain in Insidious, and he's got like a little like sharpening device for his stuff.
That's one of my favorite James Wan-isms.
That they have lairs?
Is that he gives the killer his due pretty early on in the movie. Like, you don't often get to see the killer up close like that. And a lot of cards are held close to the chest with this movie. But I love, like Insidious, you know, we're tiptoeing through the tulips.
Yeah.
Right up and close with the villain. And we get to kind of see what they're like. Which is, for some, I think it might be a little silly. But it's more jarring than it is silly.
Which I think leads us perfectly into our number two good thing about Malignant. And that is Gabriel, the villain. He is an odd duck. Like, and everything we're going to tell you right here is established very early on in the movie.
Yes, we're not going to touch on anything that we may learn about Gabriel later on. Nothing to spoil it.
I love how much we're just like, don't worry. We're not overstepping our bounds here.
I'm very protective over this movie.
And, like, you know what I got to say? Has been a great thing to see happen just like on social media. Everybody seems protective of this movie. No one, I shouldn't say no one, but mostly people are not openly talking about the stuff that you would rather have kept secret before seeing it for yourself. Gabriel himself, though, is a weird villain. He, first off, long black trench coat and black gloves with, like, stringy hair all over his face. Love that. That's just a whole look that I'll say yes to every time.
Yeah, it gives me total Headless Horseman, Sleepy Hollow vibes before he lost his head. The Christopher Walken Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah, except the hair's completely different.
Yeah, but the jacket is on point.
I love a good jacket on my villain, yeah. Is that the reason why people are calling this a giallo, by the way? Because he wears black
because
gloves.
Because of the gloves. I think it's
and there's
the gloves.
Some red light.
Yeah.
Because that is it. Like,
well, the weapon is pretty iconic. So Gabriel has pretty iconic weapon that is spotlighted throughout the film very, very obviously.
It may as well be a third character.
It is a character. Yeah. It has its own music cues. It's like schling.
So it is a trophy, like an award that his first victim.
It's a prestigious award.
Yeah, for excellence. In murder, he uses it to kill his first victim, and he takes it with him back to his lair and just, like, sharpens it down into this gnarly-ass gold-knuckle knife. It's like a 12-inch blade, I think, and he just whips that goddamn thing around.
It's pretty glorious.
Yeah, I like it a lot. The other the other weird thing about Gabriel, though, is that he can kind of control electricity.
A little bit.
Yeah, I think as they mentioned in the cold open of the movie, it's like he's drinking the electricity in the room.
But he also uses it, harnesses this electricity to communicate.
Yes.
So Gabriel communicates through radios and telephones and basically any kind of electrical device that would give him a voice.
He sounds so fucking cool, by the way. Like, god damn, does he sound so sinister when he's talking through, like, just, like, the hospital speaker.
Well, and especially because he says, like, one-liners, like, I'm gonna kill you now.
Well,
like,
yeah, that, I mean, that helps, you know. Yeah, there's a lot of that. And it's almost a little too weird. You know what I'm saying? Like, the fact that he is sort of this, like, ghostly figure who finds ways to materialize in the real world and can also control electricity. It almost seems like one thing too much.
Yes, so it's so hard to nail down because there's clearly something from the opening scene that is very supernatural about Gabriel.
Oh, yeah.
But then also there's a lot of physical representations of Gabriel, but there's also moments where he's shadow-like, so you have no idea what to think, and you're trying to, like, just absorb all of the data this movie is giving you.
It's a lot.
And trying to come up with the most probable opinion.
Yeah.
And it's halfway through this movie, you're going to have no idea what's going on.
And that really goes back to, like, one of your first points, that it is playing with your expectations of what a James Wan movie is. It knows that you, or even just, like, really a large scale Hollywood movie. You know the formula, you know the template. So you're, like, you're trying to figure the movie out as it's happening, and it keeps throwing these little tiny curveballs at you that just make it impossible to figure out exactly who Gabriel is, where he comes from, and what he wants.
Which maybe leads us to our third point. And maybe the wildest thing about this movie is the tone of it. It is full on camp, which is either going to rub people the right way or the wrong way. I think if you are a fan of 80s horror and early 2000s horror.
Oh, yeah.
Cheesy, self-aware, but also really lacking self-awareness.
Yeah.
Very contradictory, but you'll get it if you see the movie.
Yeah, huge, like big dark castle energy is the way I've been describing it to people.
Yes.
And not just because it starts with a giant ass abandoned hospital, you know what I'm saying?
But this film makes no attempt to bury its exposition or finesse the story at all. The dialogue is cringeworthy in moments.
Sometimes.
But it only makes it better. And it's full out and apparent. Some of the delivery is like, oh, you know that I'm adopted.
What? And then just like the music. Dun, 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 dun. Like, what?
Oh, I love it so, so much.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And it's because... It's not that it's not taking itself seriously, it's that it is incredibly playful with its own bizarre nature.
Yes, it's almost like the things that we in modern day horror take with such importance and consider the most important things in cinema today are just thrown on the back burner. They're just not the most important things of this film.
Yeah, fuck it.
The dialogue is not the most important thing on this film.
Nope.
The plot, it's happening, but... You know what? You're going to figure it out at the end, and we don't care if you're a little confused right now, because you're going to get it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So, like, I mean, that is like, one of the things, just talking about the dialogue, that's, like, one of the things that I didn't love about the movie initially. But I think it is essential, because it's like a Hitchcock movie that's, you know, it's got a lot of moving parts, it's got some complex stuff that it's playing with, and it's got some really weird decisions. Like, I'll just say that. It's got some odd choices that you're... going to at least spend 30 seconds going, wait, what? And in case you happen to miss something, there will be another character who tells you, who repeats what a character beside them has said, but in like a more dumbed down fashion.
I mean, it's pretty great though, because by the end of the film, no one is going to be confused about anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like, you know, I gotta say, like, if they didn't do that, and they didn't have those characters sort of re-explaining stuff that's happening, you would have a lot of people who would absolutely hate the end of this movie, because you have to buy into every step that it takes in order to appreciate the giant leap that comes in the last 20 minutes of this movie.
And it sets up a tone that is fully embraced in the end half of the movie.
Because oh, yeah.
You kind of get a feeling that we're in for something campy from the get-go just based on how things are presented. Because we know that James Wan can do a dry, not humorless, but a very serious horror film.
Oh, yeah.
We've seen them. Like, I would say that The Conjuring has very little humor. Insidious has very little humor. There are some zany things. Like, he's always made zany choices, like the gas mask. Seance.
Well, you always forget about the gas mask and the strobe light, the seance, right?
Like some wild choices that make you kind of go, But this movie makes you go, the whole way through.
Yeah, it's a slippery movie, you know? Like, and it knows, here's the thing, it knows from frame one that it's gonna be the strangest movie you've seen all year. And it buries that a little. Like, hey, we're just a regular old movie. Nothing strange to see here.
You completely forget about how wild the cold open is 10 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
I forgot the cold open existed. So we saw it again for a second time because I had no words the first time we watched
we
it.
We were going to record a few days ago, but we just couldn't.
I was like, I can't say. My mouth was on the floor. I had to pick it up. I forgot completely about the cold open. The cold open is bonkers. It presents this like mad scientist angle. And then we go into a ghost movie and you're just like, what the hell was the beginning about?
Yeah, how are these two things going to blend together? And oh boy, oh boy. Oh boy, do they. When do you think was the last time you saw a movie this strange at like a multiplex theater?
I have no idea.
Right?
I have no idea.
It's like Wes Craven's Shocker. Not that I saw that in the movie theater or anything, but, and not just because, you know, both villains seem to have a little bit of control over electricity, but like when you look at the movies that Wes Craven was making and you look at his like entire career, Shocker is the oddball out. It's like they made some decisions in this movie that you just have to buy in or you're not going to appreciate it. But if you do appreciate it, it's like the undiscovered gem of the 1980s.
I feel like this film is destined to be a cult film, and I want it to be big enough that there's revival screenings like the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, yeah.
Where we're all going dressed as Gabriel.
Yes, please.
To cheer and throw hot dogs at the screen. Like, that is what I want.
Throwing hot dogs at the screen. There's going to be so many Gabriel costumes this year for Halloween, and I can't wait to see them.
I'm so excited.
It's going to be a blast. And with all that in mind, because I honestly, like, we still have another hour of stuff. We still have a whole other slew of things that we want to talk about, but we just can't. Like, there's, and we are just scratching the surface here. Like, there is so much to talk about in Malignant, but we can't get into it because we would unfortunately be spoiling it for you, and we absolutely don't want to do that. But Kim, I'm assuming you think you would recommend people go check this movie out.
I absolutely recommend people would check this movie out. I would give it a 4 out of 4 rating without hesitation.
Oh, yeah. If this was the one podcast where we decided to up the rating scale, like I would give it a higher than 4 if I could.
6 out of 4, please.
Yes, this is one of the best movies I've seen all year. And Letterboxd just told me that my two most watched movies of the year so far are Godzilla vs. Kong and Malignant. And I got to tell you, good year.
We're going to see this a third time this weekend.
We will both have seen this 3 times in about a week, I think, right? That's got to be a new record for us.
I feel like that is a record.
It's like maybe Repo the Genetic Opera. That might have been the only other movie that we watched.
Also a cult film.
Surprise, surprise. We like the weird ones. But that's just our opinion. Let us know what you thought of Malignant over on Twitter at NOFS Podcast and in the Nightmare on Film Street Discord at NOFSpodcast.com/Discord. That might be your best place to go because we do have a specific spoiler zone. So please do not talk about those scenes in Malignant anywhere other than that spoiler channel.
We are going to keep talking, though. We have a few more spoiler-filled thoughts that we're going to share over in the Fiend Club.
3 more good things.
At nofspodcast.com/fiendclub. If this is up, it'll be up. You can listen to us getting into the finale of this movie and spoiling the shit out of it. So if you've already seen Malignant or if you know you're not going to check it out in theaters, which is a big, huge mistake.
Huge mistake.
I just want to say.
Even if you have HBO Max, go see this in the theater.
Join us over at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub. It's $6 a month. You'll have instant access to that bonus episode as well as tons of events, live streams, and we even have membership swag. You get a membership card, temporary tattoo, some stickers. It's a ton of fun over there. I've already said it twice, but nofspodcast.com/fiendclub.
But that's it for us this week. I'm John.
I'm Kim.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.